Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. Perfect for on-the-go or as a healthy pick-me-up, Irish kombucha brand Synergy includes all the amazing benefits of kombucha, and I'm delighted to team up with them for the coming weeks. Craft brewed in Donegal using 100% natural ingredients, Synergy is packed full of live cultures and naturally occurring enzymes, which helps to detox the body, supports gut health and aids digestion. And they've just launched their first canned range of sparkling drinks. Naturally vegan, low in calories and gluten-free, you can pick up one of their latest cans in supermarkets nationwide. And for more on the brand, simply go to synergykombucha.ie. This week, my guest is menopause coach Catherine O'Keefe, who goes by the name wellnesswarrior.ie.
If you look at the Japanese, we can learn so much from the Japanese. They've got a term for menopause called kanenkai, which translates as renewal years.
Oh,
that's
I love that.
What it is. Okay. I mean, it is really, and it, I always say, because I work with so many women whose symptoms can be extremely tough, the key is getting a handle on the symptoms. And once you do that, honestly, it is a time to flourish.
This is an episode I wanted to record for ages, and I'm so glad it finally happened. We spoke about so much that I've decided to split it into two to allow you to absorb the information, as menopause is such a complicated and sensitive topic, and the experience of it is so different for every woman. Originally from Kilkenny, Catherine lives in Dublin with her husband Tom, their 3 boys and their dog Joy. And in this conversation, she'll discuss the physical, mental and emotional aspects of perimenopause and menopause and the impact of stress. She'll also talk about the importance of sleep, eating well, self-care practices and cognitive behavioural therapy in managing symptoms. And I started the conversation by asking her about her own experience.
So I'm 50 now, right? So I would have started perimenopause when I was 44. So that's 6 years ago. Perimenopause is subtle. It's gentle for the most part. It starts very gradually. It's not like, and I'm talking now about natural menopause. We'll talk about the other forms later. But it starts very gradually. So for me, I was at that time, I was still working in the corporate world. I was traveling a lot. My job was pretty full on. I was a director in an investment bank. Fair bit of pressure. And I started to notice that I would be sitting in meetings, and all of a sudden, figures would run out of my head, facts that I would have had at the tip of my tongue that would just reel off my tongue without any issue. All of a sudden, it was kind of like, oh God, I can't remember. And then that kind of had a knock-on effect that your confidence dips and your self-esteem, because you start to question yourself. So that was probably, that was the start for me. And very much perimenopause starts on the emotional realm for most women. It's not that you're looking for the change in your cycle. It's more what's happening for you emotionally. Right. At the same time, for me, my periods had started to change. They had gotten heavier and I had scans done and everything looked absolutely fine. I had no fibroids. I had nothing. All was perfect. And then I went away with my college friends for a weekend to Copenhagen. And we were sitting in this lovely restaurant and having a great night out. And I'd had a little bit of spotting the few days before, just a small bit. All of a sudden, it was my first experience of what's called flooding, where your period comes on very heavily in a very short space of time. So I was sitting in this restaurant and I'll tell you, I left the restaurant with a jacket around my waist because I was absolutely destroyed.
Oh, God love you. Okay.
And that happened in the space of, it was 30, 40 minutes.
Right.
Probably.
So were you expecting your period?
I was due one, but, you know,
not the way it happened. Wow.
So when I came back then, when I came back to Dublin, I went to see my GP, obviously, and I had a scan done again. Absolutely nothing wrong with me. It was just one of those flooding episodes that can happen. It doesn't happen that many women. After that, I had two periods after that, which were heavy enough. And then everything calmed down.
Okay.
My cycle calmed down nicely. It starts to change a little bit. I went from 28 to maybe 29 days. Then I'd go to 30, then maybe back to 28. Little bit erratic. But I guess for me, I had gone back to college. I'd studied complementary medicine. I had so many tools then that I knew, right, okay, let's tackle this head on. So I literally, you know, I there's nothing that was would tell me or was going to tell my doctor or will tell a woman, you know, Catherine, you're in year one of perimenopause. It really, at those early stages, comes down to the symptoms. So then really it was getting my toolkit together. I always talk about having a personal toolkit. So it's your lifestyle choices, you know, all the what I call the non-negotiables, the things in life that will make perimenopause easier. But when you start with the emotional aspects of it, which anxiety is probably the biggest one, Sheila, that is not talked about enough. And it is the one that can be so debilitating for so many women, because you all of us, you know, anxiety comes out of nowhere. You may never have had anxiety in your life before, and all of a sudden this is on your doorstep. And it's anxiety can rear its head in perimenopause in many different forms. Social anxiety, health anxiety, or generalized anxiety disorder would be quite common. You know, so the I always say, you know, the emotional aspect really needs to be taken care of. You need to be very, very mindful of it. But so I guess just going back to my journey, so that all kind of happened at 44 at the time. And in hindsight, this was part of my my own kind of menopause journey, was the fact that I wanted a change. I knew I'd been over 20 years in the corporate world, and the time was there for me to change. So I left banking, and I'd already gone back to college. So then, you know, a year or two later, I set up Wellness Warrior, and then concentrated wholeheartedly on menopause. So I would often find most women that I work with, an outlet is wanted at some stage of the perimenopause journey. That could be learning a new language. It could be reading a new topic of books. It could be going to a new place. But creativity and meaning become very important once you get a handle on your symptoms. So, you know, you'll find a lot of the amount of women that I would know who've set up new businesses, you know, who've changed jobs, or maybe they've taken up a new language, or they're playing, you know, a new musical instrument or something, is becomes quite important. And that's what perimenopause does. It ruffles your feathers. It's literally like, right, you know, Catherine, I want to give you a little shake up here. I want to remind you of all the, you know, maybe the things that you haven't done and that you want to do, and bring you back to kind of, right, what do you want to achieve in your life? And I guess for me, you know, I've always loved working with people, and this is my passion, you know, trying to educate as many people as I can and help as many people, and as many women, and not just women, men as well, because it's really important that it's a conversation, you know, across all the society. So for me, since those days, I have been extremely lucky. So far, I haven't had a hot flush yet. It's not to say they might still happen.
Yeah, okay.
But as all my symptoms change, I just hop in and manage them. And that's one thing, you have to be constantly looking at the symptoms.
Can I just say, though, we're only a few minutes into the conversation, and I love that straight away I get the feeling that whenever I hear conversations, or even the questions I got from my followers, there's a lot of the questions are fear-based. A lot of it is the negative about perimenopause and menopause. But you've just reflected that there are positives, and it can be a force of good, depending on how you look at it and whether you tune in to. I mean, I just find that really interesting, that it sounds like you were being given all these signs to pay attention and go, is this really what you want, Catherine?
Yes.
And you had the bravery to say, okay, I'm now in my mid-40s, but now I'm going to make a change in my life. I mean, fair play to you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you look at the Japanese, we can learn so much from the Japanese. They've got a term for menopause called kanenkai, which translates as renewal years.
Oh,
that's,
I love that.
What it is.
Okay.
I mean, it is really, and I always say, because I work with so many women whose symptoms can be extremely tough, the key is getting a handle on the symptoms. And once you do that, honestly, it is a time to flourish. It is a time to renew. It's a time to, you know, maybe like your kids have gotten older, maybe your life circumstances have changed so that you can have a little bit more freedom. You know, on the flip side of that, it can also be a time where it is more the sandwich years, where maybe you have a bit more going on. So, you know, you have to be a bit more mindful of stress and how that's impacting your life. But you will transition through that, whether it's during perimenopause or menopause, you will transition through it. I think the important thing, it's very important to be empowered, because if you're empowered, I believe it takes the fear away, you know.
Yes. And across everything.
Yeah.
On any topic. I think once you know and you have the information at hand and you're not afraid to ask questions or hear the answer, it just gives you a level of comfort, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get into perimenopause first. I suppose one of the questions that I keep hearing is, when does it start? I would imagine it's different for every woman, but can you give the average range of the start, you know, the earliest start date, as it were, and maybe the latest start age that it could be?
Hopefully everyone's sitting down for this.
Go on.
So we'll concentrate on natural menopause. We'll talk separately about early menopause.
Okay, great.
So what I'm talking about now is natural menopause. For the average woman, perimenopause will start around the age of 45. I started earlier. I started probably 44, maybe 43. I am definitely seeing women starting perimenopause earlier than 45. And that would be where you're starting to experiencing, you know, the emotional aspects, maybe the anxiety, some mild depression, different symptoms like that.
But why are they experiencing it earlier?
No rhyme or reason to that, in terms of there's no proven research. But okay. I firmly believe stress has a huge part to play. Mm. I would definitely put my own hand up and say, when I look back, I was definitely under a fair bit of stress, you know, when I was 43, 44. So that would be my personal experience of it. But I am seeing more of it. And I think we're stress in today's world is very different to what our parents had to face. So you're looking at 45, then perimenopause goes on for a good number of years. The average age of menopause is 51. The average journey from perimenopause to menopause is between 4 to 10 years. Now, menopause itself is actually the anniversary of 12 months without a period. So I often say if you had a period on the 1st of January 2020 and then you didn't have another period till the 2nd of January 2021, then you've hit the 12-month anniversary. That's menopause.
Okay.
What can happen after that is you might have 1, 2, 3 more periods, or you mightn't have any. That most women tend to have go a year without a period. Then they might have 1 or 2 and then they're gone. You know, after a 1, 2 year period, they're finished. And then you're into postmenopause. And postmenopause, often people think, how long is that? Postmenopause is the rest of your life. It's
okay, yeah.
From there on in. So it's not like a finite period. So really, when you look at it, it's all about perimenopause in terms of the symptoms that we talk about. They all start to gradually build up over the perimenopause years, and the culmination is the menopause years. And when you're talking about perimenopause, you're the symptoms, there's over 43. There's a lot of symptoms.
Okay.
I can't say in another 6 to 9 months whether they may have associated some more symptoms possibly, but we know the key hormones that are at play impact all of our body. It's not just, you know, one part. It's not just our pelvic regions.
Yeah.
It's our, you know, from the tops of our head down to our baby toes are impacted by the hormones. When we look at those hormones, we're talking about progesterone, estrogen and testosterone. They are the three at play. And progesterone tends to be the one that starts to reduce first. And that would be, progesterone is our calming, our nurturing hormone. So if you think about it, that starts to decline first and then we start to see the increase of anxiety. That makes sense.
Yeah, of course it does.
Because it's on, you know, the nervous system, it's in that realm. And then estrogen. But estrogen is not a simple decline. It comes and goes. You know, I always say it's a bit like a boomerang. It doesn't know what it's at. It's flying backwards and forwards. And that decline then is over, you know, anywhere from, you know, it's a period of years, 4 to 10 years, depending. So it's that interplay of the hormones is what creates the symptoms. So if you look at, you know, the fact estrogen, for example, like impacts literally every single part of our body. So as that decline starts to happen, it's going to throw out symptoms. It's going to throw out changes in the body. And that's what we see when we look at the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause.
Can we talk about those three hormones in a slightly more detail? Because it's interesting you said that about progesterone, that it's the calming kind of hormone. And that absolutely makes sense when you explain that, you know, women maybe feel a little bit more anxious in situations where they previously wouldn't have if their levels are lowering. Estrogen, what would be the main function of estrogen in terms of its connection to the symptoms?
Everything.
Okay.
Estrogen is such a protective hormone throughout our body. I mean, we know it impacts our brain health. We know it impacts our heart health. It impacts our bones. It's literally like the lights on the Christmas tree. If you think about it, when you turn on your lights, the whole Christmas tree is lit up. Estrogen is the exact same for our body.
Right.
It is so important in terms of what it does. Our ovaries are the main production place for estrogen. And obviously that declines as you go through perimenopause, menopause. Yeah. We still have the adrenal glands, which will produce another form of estrogen as we get older. But the problem, Sheila, we face there is stress. So when we're in a stressful situation, the adrenal glands won't be thinking, oh, I must produce my estrogen. It'll be thinking, no, I must produce my cortisol. I'm in my fight and flight. So that is why I wholeheartedly believe one of the biggest areas for all women to work on is stress. And that's regardless of whether you're on HRT, complementary therapies, whatever you're doing. The stress element of it is massive, and it's the one area that, you know, needs constant work.
Yeah, we keep hearing about adrenal fatigue.
It's
extremely common nowadays. So that makes sense.
Yeah, so then the adrenals wouldn't be producing the estrogen. Now, they will never have produced as much as the ovaries, but when the ovaries close up shop and they literally say, right, okay, I'm done, then you can move to the adrenals. But if you're under constant stress, those adrenals are going to prioritize, you know, they're not going to be prioritizing the hormones that are used for fertility over the hormones that are used to save you in a survival situation. And this is where our body, our bodies are amazing in terms of the intricate relationships between all the hormones. But our bodies will still try and protect us when we think there's a roaring lion behind us, when in actual fact it might be because you're scrolling through Instagram and it sends your heart rate up, or Facebook, or, you know, something else, or the TV program or something, you know. And then the other hormone, which has a big part to play and can certainly have a bigger part for some women more than others, is testosterone. It's not just for men. Women need it as well. And we would often find that where there's the libido drops, where energy really drops, where maybe, you know, the memory, the brain kind of cognition and things like that really aren't responding to maybe changes you've made to help in terms of progesterone and estrogen, then it may be that testosterone is what you need to look at. You'll find, I would say, the majority of women, it tends to be progesterone and estrogen that causes more of the issues. But then you will have many women as well who will suffer with the loss of testosterone as well, you know. So it's one thing with menopause, just to say, I probably should have said that straight off. No two women in the world will have the same menopause.
Okay.
It's different for every single woman.
And that's what makes this conversation so compelling, but also quite complicated, because there's a lot to cram in to one chat, and it's not a one size fits all.
No, big time. I mean, I always say that, and I think it's very important, and I've learned this, or I'm very aware of it, I should say, over the last number of years, because obviously being involved in a lot on the kind of the social media front, and, you know, being out there in terms of articles, interviews and so forth, I'm very conscious of being respectful to all women. And I sometimes think we all need to remind ourselves about that a little bit, because my menopause won't be the same as my sister's. It's not the same as my mother's. My best friend will have a different menopause. Anyone I work with will have a different menopause. And the choices all of us make are our choices.
Yes.
And I just think sometimes we need to be very mindful of the fact that it's respectful to let every woman have their own choice. And that is their choice, you know, and we can't be hardlining anything. And particularly, I think women love choice. I love to have a choice. Yes. I love to be empowered to know what my choices are. And I think that's really, really important. I've sat in situations where I've done public talks, and, you know, I've been in situations where women have come up to me afterwards and, you know, in tears, and they have said to me, Catherine, I sat there and I listened to other people, you know, saying how amazing life is on HRT. But I've had breast cancer, I've estrogen positive breast cancer, and I can't do X, Y or Z because of my own personal history. Why I'm losing out. And that's, you know, and I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we just have to be extremely respectful that we're all on a different journey. You know, similarly, you know, there might be a woman who's thriving on acupuncture and maybe doing brilliantly for her. And then you might have, you know, someone on the flip side of that who's maybe concerned about HRT, you know. So I think we just respect is really important when it comes to this conversation.
I'm so glad you said that. It's so important to have that compassion across any issue that causes a person to be fearful or resistant to it as well. And I'm aware of it. As I told you, like, I'm nearly 42 and I am in a different phase of my life simply because I want to have another child.
Yeah.
And I'm now, and only recently, trying again, because psychologically it took me a long time to allow myself to go there again simply because I had had two miscarriages. But I'm hopeful, but I'm also aware of my age. That's a bit of a detour, but I suppose what I'm trying to reflect is that there will be women perhaps listening to this conversation that have already started to have symptoms at maybe late 30s, early 40s, and they're wondering, and I know that the kind of the stereotypical age is about 45, but I know it can happen earlier as well. And we will get into the early onset menopause examples, which are really complicated and very sad, actually. But let's just stay with the hormones at the moment in perimenopause and how then it manifests physically.
So because there's so many, let's talk about the common ones. And I'll touch on some of the less common ones. And I'm just going to go from the head down because I'll lose track. Otherwise, because there's so many of them. So I've mentioned about the psychological aspect of it. And I would say to anyone listening, please don't sit on the fence with this one. If you feel that you notice yourself changing in terms of you're feeling a little bit more anxious, you maybe feel that you're feeling a little bit more down, you know, don't push it under the carpet. Look at it. And there's so many ways you can look at it. You know, certainly speak to your GP if you feel you need to, or, you know, look at some other tools. I'm a huge believer of journaling, so I do a lot of that myself on a daily basis. I practice a lot of, you know, gratitude and things like that that really work for me. I think just please don't ignore that realm, because if you do, it will only exasperate. Whereas if you can greet it gently in those early days, you actually are going to make the journey so much more of a transformation, and you will set yourself up to thrive through menopause as opposed to, you know, it being more of a struggle. And also there we're talking about brain fog, memory, concentration. They're huge. They impact. I mean, I think every woman I've worked with has had issues with brain fog, you know, where you go to the fridge and you've put the car keys in the fridge. Or there was a lady was sharing a story with me recently where she put carrots in the tumbler dryer. So it's are you forget names? Or you're, and that's, that can be scary.
True, that happens to me. That's happened to me for the past 10 years. But I know what you mean. I'm not trying to, you know, belittle anybody's experience, but so just more than usual, more forgetful, more doddery.
It's like you're introduced to someone and 2 seconds later you forget their name. And like I would say every day I will get a message from someone, Catherine, I think I have early dementia. This is happening. And it's like, Sheila, that it is fear. It's not it's not a joke.
No, it is
real fear because the brain fog can really just take over your life and become extremely difficult. So that is a big, big part of it. And that can continue all the way through unless you're doing the preventative steps to help yourself. On top of that, which is probably one of the biggest issues in menopause, perimenopause, is sleep, insomnia. That can be for many reasons. It can be because of the anxiety, it can be because of the stress that you're not winding down, you're not grounding yourself, you're not kind of clearing your body of the cortisol from the day into the night, which means you won't have the restorative sleep that you need. And we know it's key when it comes to not only menopause, it's key for future-proofing our lives down the road, because we're all living longer. So we've got to start thinking not about just the perimenopause symptoms. We've got to start looking at our 40s and 50s and think, right, I've got to future-proof myself for my 80s and 90s. And that's a mindset shift that we also need to start looking at. I've started to work on that in terms of when I'm talking and so forth. But sleep is a huge issue. So, you know, so you can, it can be because of the anxiety. It can also be because you're having crippling night sweats and you can be drenched. And I'm talking about absolutely drenched, where you have to change your night dress, your pajamas, whatever it is. Some women may just change it once during the night. Another woman might have to change it two or three times. They might have to change bedclothes because they're so wet. You know, it really just, again, it depends.
And again, why does that happen? Excuse my ignorance.
That again is back to the depletion in the hormones, and there is primarily down to your estrogen. Okay. Your declining estrogen, which is going to change the kind of cardiovascular, the vasomotor symptoms, and that will basically trigger the hot flushes.
So is it, yeah, I was just about to ask. So a night sweat is a hot flush at night?
Pretty much so, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now, you can also have them in daylight
hours. Oh, God, yeah. And it's like that intense, it's literally an intense heat from your chest upwards, where literally, I mean, you're talking about, you'll go from pale white to tomato red in seconds.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously if you're at home in bed, that's, you know, you can manage it. You're at home, you can throw off your clothes.
Yeah.
If you're out in public, it's a very different kettle of fish. And if you're in the workplace, it's even more difficult because you can't control the air conditioning if you're in an office. You can't open windows generally if you're in an office. So it's different challenges depending on where you are. But one thing to mention when we look at hot flushes and night sweats, for some women, you can definitely see a reduction in duration and a reduction in frequency if you look at ways to manage your stress. And very much so if you look at trying to bring in daily meditation, even for as short as 15 minutes a day, it can help to reduce the duration and the frequency. Not for all women, but there is a portion of women that it can definitely help. They did a study in the UK a couple of years ago, about, I think it was 250 women, and they got them to do daily meditation, and there was a 60% reduction in the duration and the frequency of night sweats as a result of it. Yeah. We know that it helps.
Yes.
We also know that CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is very, very helpful for many of the menopause symptoms, particularly for anxiety, insomnia, night sweats and so forth.
Really interesting, because I'm aware of it, but I haven't gone to a practitioner per se. But I'm aware that you can actually almost train yourself.
Yes, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
I love about it because to me, it's, and particularly now in COVID times, because you can literally buy a book on Amazon. Mm. You can download a book on Kindle. You can get, well, I always a big fan of the libraries.
Yeah.
But before COVID, you can get a book and you can start at home and you can work on CBT yourself. Alternatively, what was lovely before COVID is you could do group work, which I know a lot of women would have found really beneficial.
Yeah.
Or you can obviously work with a therapist as well. But it's a very practical tool. And also there's Professor Myra Hunter in the UK has actually developed techniques that are specific to menopause. And if you Google them, you'll find, you know, these great resources.
Okay,
of
brilliant.
Little, you know, techniques. And I can certainly send them to you that you can share.
For those listening who are just hearing about CBT for the first time, can you just explain it in a few lines?
So CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a very proactive, hands-on approach to tackling any form of life issue, but it'd be very commonly known kind of for anxiety, stress, anger, you know, maybe the more difficult emotions. And we know that it is very successful with menopause. What it basically does is that you look at for triggers, you look at events that happen that maybe cause, you know, if something makes you feel anxious, what is the trigger? What made you feel anxious? And part of understanding what the trigger is, it brings awareness to the situation, and then you can look at ways to, I guess, mindfully work through how do you resolve those triggers or what do you need to change. So one of the very common forms of anxiety in menopause is social anxiety. And that can be, you can have many women who've never had an issue, who have had a great social life, love going out and never an issue with it. All of a sudden, they start to feel a little bit more anxious. All of a sudden, no, I prefer to stay at home. I don't want to go, you know, out to the cinema. I don't want to go to the restaurant, whatever that is. And where CBT can be very helpful there is like a graded exposure approach, where you gradually build back into social occasions. And I think, unfortunately, Sheila, I think after COVID, I think we're all going to have an issue with this.
I think so.
You know, because like, you know,
when we get used to things and it's been so long now.
We do.
That we've been living in kind of a hermit lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So if you have if you have a woman who's already experiencing, you know, some little bit of social anxiety,
and then coupled with the pandemic,
then to come back into that, you CBT offers you that very gentle approach at your own progress, you know, in terms of what sits well with you, to kind of bring you back into, well, you know, I would, you know, you start small. It wouldn't be like, you know, going to the pub or something. It would be, you meet a friend for a walk, and maybe you meet a friend for a coffee, then maybe you have lunch. It's very gradual, and it's, you know, it's, but it's always having that awareness around triggering events and situations. And we know when it comes to menopause, we always have to be aware of the triggers, because let's say, for example, with the hot flushes and the night sweats, there's so many things that will trigger that. Yes, we've got the hormone decline, but if you have a spicy meal, if you are drinking a lot of coffee, caffeine is a big trigger for many menopause symptoms, from anxiety to hot flushes to night sweats to bloating.
So you not your friend.
Not your friend. No, no. I was working with them. I was working with a lady, it's about a year, 2 years ago, and she was having huge issues with hot flushes and sleep. And we'd gone through everything, and I was like, you've perfect, you've it all going. Like, she's perfect lifestyle, food and everything. And then I just thought, and you know, do you like to drink to your coffee? And she said, oh, I would, yeah. And I said, well, how many a day? And she was silent for a few minutes. And so I said, how many would you have a day? And she said, probably 13, 14 cups of tea. I was like, oh my God, the caffeine implications of that. There was no way she was going to sleep, you know, and then plus it was going to exacerbate hot flushes and night sweats. And the other thing about caffeine is that we've got to be aware, too, of the long term impacts on our bone health. You know, so it's important to be aware of that as well. So I always kind of say, with anybody who is suffering with any form of insomnia in particular, really, you need to be cutting out the caffeine from probably 2 p.m. in the day. And, you know, if you're still finding things aren't moving, then maybe you are very sensitive to caffeine. We know it stays in our system, you know, for, I think, up to 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know, so it's important to be mindful of that.
And before two, what would you suggest?
Well,
a mug or two, or is that even too much?
Well, no, I you know, I would kind of say if you could cap it at three, I think.
But, okay, that's, but then, not, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
But you're then still getting your hit in the
morning.
We're
all different.
Yeah, sure.
And this is where we have to be, you know, mindful, because one person can handle three, no problem. Another person...
It's really sensitive to it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So that's kind of... So the emotion...
We're still in the head.
We're still in the head, yeah.
Right.
There's a lot in the head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure we'll come back to the head. And in, you know, we're still on to migraines and headaches.
Okay.
You, again, can just appear out of nowhere. And if you've never had a migraine before and you start experiencing them, you know, that can be extremely difficult, because they're very, very tough. And, you know, some people, they can be more severe than others. Then, you know, you're looking at also, just to mention, panic attacks. Are very, very common. And one thing to say about panic attacks, I always say, if it lasts over 5 minutes and you've never had one before, do check in with your GP, because we know that if your thyroid is out of sync or if you're anemic, that it can also cause a panic attack to happen, and palpitations.
Okay.
So it's really important to make sure. I always say we should be doing like our annual, let's call it an MOT, an NCT with our GP to get our bloods checked.
For sure.
to make sure, not that they're going to tell you, you know, you're in year two of perimenopause, but they're actually going to make sure there isn't anything else going on there that we need to be aware of. And particularly when it comes to like palpitations and panic attacks, that's where your iron, your thyroid are very important.
So when you are going to the GP and you're getting your bloods done, and if you are concerned about maybe having the symptoms, what mm-hmm. should you be asking for? Because I'm a big believer in tests, and I get my bloods taken often because I have no thyroid gland.
Okay.
Simply because I had thyroid cancer years ago. So I take Eltroxin every morning mm-hmm. and it's grand, but I have to keep an eye on it because it can go out of sync sometimes.
Yeah.
But
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're going to your GP, are you asking for particular bloods to be taken?
When it comes to menopause and your GP visit, most GPs will look at the symptoms first.
Okay.
And it is the symptoms. That is really what you do want to concentrate on. Mm. You look at the blood, where the blood work is helpful is in ruling out anything else going on.
Right.
Now, we do have, you do have the FSH level, the follicle stimulating hormone, which you'll be very familiar with from the aspect of kind of fertility and so forth. But that's changes. And I've worked with women who, you know, have, you know, will say, oh, Catherine, the GP told me that I'm in menopause. And I was like, you know, what day of your cycle were you on when you had the bloods done?
Yeah.
You know, what symptoms are you showing? And in actual fact, they may not be in menopause at all.
Can I just say on that, because I have heard that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I absolutely bow my head to science and doctors and nurses and the works. And I, you know, they're the reason I'm here talking to you today. But I also think that, my goodness, it sounds very irresponsible to be coming out with these sweeping statements when that may not be the case. And it can cause so much anxiety and fear and sadness in the person who's just received this news. Because if you start to believe it, well, then maybe you'll actually start to put yourself into menopause. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in that.
No, you're totally right.
That mind-body kind of connection. And I just find that outrageous. You know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah, no, you're totally right, Sheila.
Okay.
And like, you look, mindset's not going to cure your menopause symptoms or all of them, but it can help, definitely.
Help, yeah.
And yes, I think we have to be extremely careful with FSH, because if you're a woman at 44 who shows a high FSH reading and you're told, yeah, oh, you're actually in menopause, that's a very different conversation to being told at the age of 54 you're, you know,
of course,
in menopause
or
you're post-menopause. But a lot of GPs will not use that as the kind of the main sign of where you're at. So that's where the symptoms are very important. But what I like to look at in the bloods is I like to look at iron. I like to look at the iron stores, so the serum ferritin. I like to look at B12 because it's so important in menopause. It is so important. The B vitamins are crucial in menopause. I also like to look at vitamin D, because vitamin D is extremely important too, not just for our immune health, but also for our bone health. And we also know that low vitamin D impacts anxiety. So it's really important to be on top of vitamin D as well.
Yes.
So when you're doing your blood work, you're keeping a check on everything and, you know, making sure that there isn't anything starting to creep in. And what can often happen is the thyroid can start to go a little bit out of whack.
Yeah.
And you need to keep an eye on that, because a lot of the thyroid symptoms can look very similar to perimenopause.
Yes.
A lot of the symptoms of low iron can look very similar to perimenopause. And that's why you need to be clear, is it perimenopause or am I anemic? It's as simple as that. So you're ruling that out by doing the blood work. And then you can make the tweaks that you need to make based on the results. That's why I like the annual check. And then as you go through the menopause journey and as you know that you are well into perimenopause, it's important to have the right GP for you on the journey, because not only are you going to be checking your bloods, you're going to be looking at, you know, am I keeping on top of my breast check? Am I keeping on top of my smear? Do I need a DEXA scan based on my family history? Is there osteoporosis? Do I need to get a DEXA scan done to look at my bone health, which is what the DEXA does?
Yeah. What age normally do women go for DEXA scans?
Generally around 50.
Yeah.
But some women, it can be earlier based on the family history.
Right.
So I'm sitting at the moment, I have a letter at home to go for mine. I'm 50. But not all women will, they may not be aware of it, or they may not think they need it. But I'm a great believer in as much as we know about what's happening with our bodies, the better. Because
absolutely.
If, for example, when I go for mine, if it showed up as osteopenia, at least I can have preventative steps in place.
Yeah.
To stop osteoporosis. So it's very important from that perspective. And then obviously if you've early menopause, it's even more important that you have a DEXA scan done. And the other things that you're looking at with your GP, I think it's just having a solid GP who is knowledgeable on menopause is really important, because at some point you may want to have the HRT conversation.
Yeah.
You may want to have the conversation about, you know, do you need HRT? Because maybe you don't, maybe you do. And you need an experienced GP for that. Menopause is a sensitive subject. I mean, it's fine for you and me. I talk about it the whole time. I mean, my eight-year-old son was asking Siri at the weekend what menopause was about. And he was telling me, Mammy, Siri doesn't really understand menopause like I do. And I was kind of like, oh, my God. You know, but, you know, I think for many women, they struggle to discuss many of the symptoms, and we'll touch on those in a minute. And, you know, I've had so many fabulous, positive conversations with so many GPs around Ireland over the last couple of years that are really trying to get the time within very busy practices to train themselves more, to learn more about, you know. And I think we have to take a minute for GPs in terms of, they've got very busy practices, and menopause is one part of their puzzle. And I think they're trying to help as best they can. And unfortunately, not all GPs across the country are as knowledgeable as some are. But one of the things that I've been trying to do over the last year and a half is find those GPs who have gotten that extra bit of training in menopause, that they're comfortable with HRT, that they understand it, and they understand, you know, how it can work based on every woman is different.
Is it true that some women who present at their GP with symptoms are sometimes put on antidepressants?
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad, because I think I might have forgotten that. We definitely overprescribe antidepressants in menopause. It's not just Ireland. It's the same in the UK. It's definitely the same in the States. antidepressants are not the first port of call for menopause symptoms. No way. They should never be. Now, obviously, if there's a different history there, if there's a history of depression, if there's a history of cancer, that maybe is a reason why they're being used, then obviously that's in that particular case. But they should not be the first line of defence.
And is it because sometimes the woman, this is an assumption now, I'm just putting it out there. Is it that they're reluctant to accept that perhaps they're entering into perimenopause or menopause and it's actually, okay.
That is there, right. Sheila. That is there. There's definitely, look, we are not good at aging in society. Mm-hmm. Let's be very honest here, we're not. So many women don't want to admit to the fact that they are heading towards the menopause years. Because part of that is accepting that, yes, we're aging. Mm. Now, that I'll always come back to is mindset. Like I'm 50, I'm very healthy. I do everything that I enjoy, that I like to do, which kind of, makes sure it sets me up. My attitude to aging is very different. I'm embracing it as opposed to running away from it. But definitely there are many women who would prefer to be on antidepressants than possibly HRT because their personal connotation maybe, Okay. But I will say if a woman is presenting with pure menopausal symptoms, the chances of a more effective relief will be through the right use of HRT, obviously with the caveat of, that person's personal history. But you look, how we're going to change society's view of menopause and aging, God, that's a lifetime's work, I think for me, the way I look at it is, my passion is that we openly discuss in a supportive environment menopause across all society. We've a long road to go in this whole conversation.
Is it struggling to accept that we're getting older? I mean, purely because I suppose I've always come from the, and I know I'm only 41 going on 42, but
you're a young spring chicken.
Well, do you know what? I feel good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
An age to me genuinely doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an issue at any stage of my life. And I'd like to think in my 50s, 60s, 70s, please God, well into my whatever, is my own granny is still alive at 101.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? I hope I will never have an issue with my age because it is what it is.
Yeah.
We were born on a day in a year that we can't change.
Yeah.
And we're all getting a bit older. But it's not all negative because I feel like, and this is where, this is maybe again, it's a mindset thing. And even on this podcast, I've spoken to people into their 70s, I think there's wisdom, life experience that comes with age that I think needs to be respected and honoured and celebrated because it's priceless.
The wisdom of women in menopause, and I would even include early menopause here because of the journey that you go through. You can't buy that. I mean, the wisdom is just unbelievable, from the experiences you'll have had through life, but also from the personal transition that you will go through as part of your perimenopause journey. And that's one thing that I often talk a lot about when I'm working with workplaces and corporates is, the value of employees within the workplace who are in that menopause journey, be it perimenopause or menopause, you can't replace that in terms of retention and rehiring and so forth because of the wisdom and because of the life experience. It's going to be completely different to bringing somebody new in. And that's why we really have to value women in the workplace. And we really have to value the contribution and support women as they go through menopause at work. And plus, we know for a fact women in the age group 45 up to 60 are the fastest growing age group in the workplace in the UK and pretty, I think, also in Ireland as well. We have, at the moment, give or take, now they're all statistics, but if you look at the 2016 census, we've got about 560,000 women in Ireland in menopause right now. I would say that's an under, you know, I wouldn't say that's an accurate figure, because we don't have any stats on menopause. You know, we've no stats on early menopause.
Okay.
So we're going just purely on age. And if you look, like, we've over, I think it's 350,000 women working that will be in menopause right now. Again, there's probably more. You know, so I think that wisdom impacts all society. You know, it's grannies, it's mums, it's aunts, it's, you know, it's everywhere.
It's the women, it's the people that we go to for advice. And we respect it. And we listen. It's interesting. I wonder, is there change happening in society? Because it seems like youth is so celebrated, and it has its place. We've all we were all young once. I still feel very young at heart. And I hope I always will. But you know, there's no doubt about it. People who have lived life, who've experienced it, they're the ones with the knowledge.
I think if you look at it, there's more celebrities coming out talking about menopause, for sure.
Okay.
Which helps. On the other side, it does help. I'm also very conscious of the fact that menopause is having a moment. And I guess I would talk a lot about this in terms of, I'll get a lot of messages from followers and so forth, be saying, oh, Catherine, I found this supplement on Google. It's going to cure me of all my symptoms. What do you think? And, you know, I'd look at them. No, thanks. Not today. But it's becoming an industry. And I think whilst the awareness from celebrities talking about it more definitely helps us. And it's, you know, any amount of awareness helps the cause as such in terms of having menopause out there. But I think we have to also be then very careful that it's used in the right way.
Okay.
You know, that it's helping women.
That's
and
right.
I think that's where I just feel that, you know, I'm very passionate about products that, if they will help women, that they are pure.
So let's leave the supplements aside for the moment. We will absolutely get to it. But going back to the physical symptoms.
Yes. Okay. So the head, heartburn can be quite common as well. So particularly, you know, don't eat late meals late at night. And all of that then kind of ties into metabolism, where we know our metabolism changes because of the hormones declining.
It slows down.
It slows down, yeah. So often, you know, weight gain becomes an issue. And many times, you know, I'm asked, you know, I just can't move the weight. And that is metabolism. That is your metabolism changing. It's not firing on all cylinders as quickly as it would have done in your 20s and 30s. And that's where it's kind of, you know, fad diets that may have worked in the past aren't going to be your friend now. And it's really back to, you know, nourishing, wholesome, good foods, making sure that you're getting, you know, a really good supply of nutrients, vitamins, minerals into your body through your diet. Because we also know our absorption is not as good as it would have been when we were younger. And then on top of that, we also know, going back to our parents' days, the quality of our food, for the most part, is not as good as what our parents may have eaten. Now, I'm a huge supporter of organic fruit and vegetables. That's what I kind of thrive on, you know, because I do know with regular farming methods now, there's more fertilizers, different things going into the soil. And that's why, you know there's depletion of magnesium. And magnesium is one of those foods and sources that is really important in menopause.
Okay.
And that then kind of brings us on to aches and pains.
I was just about to say, because again, they were a lot of the questions that we were getting in. Yeah, magnesium is obviously really good for that.
Yeah. Aches and pains can be really crippling for many women in menopause. Mm. And it doesn't matter whether you're, doing a lot of, you may not be doing much exercise, you may be doing a huge amount of exercise, you may still just get random aches and pains in the joints, in the back, you know, anywhere at all. And that kind of brings me back to why, you know, the DEXA scan is important too, because just to see if there is anything more there that you're kind of being flagged. But very much you can often find increasing magnesium through your diet or through supplement can really impact and really help. And it's not just with aches and pains, it can help so many of the other symptoms.
Yeah, and often it comes in a calcium magnesium complex as well. And I suppose if issues are a thing, it might be good, or is it?
Yeah, it would. It could be. If you have osteopenia, then definitely I would be looking at what I call the key four: calcium, magnesium, vitamin D and vitamin K are the four that you want together. If it's not that, or you have enough calcium in your diet, then you might just need pure magnesium.
Okay.
With magnesium, you have to be so careful of the form that you're taking.
Yeah, citrate. All of the different ones. Yeah.
There's so many forms. There's about nine.
Yeah, because I take magnesium, but I had to learn about it myself because I go into the health shop and go, I'm bamboozled with all the different versions.
I researched this in detail about 2 years ago because I started using a magnesium product and I was getting such a personal response to it. I was like, oh my God, it's like magic in a tub. Mm. But so then I started researching it more, and there's so many different forms, some of them better than others depending on what you want it for. Yeah. And then some maybe aren't going to add much value to your diet. So it's really, really important to be aware of the form and the type that you're taking. But we can talk a bit more about
Let's get back to that later, the
supplements. Mm. But the other big area then to look at is the pelvic area. Mm. So when I talk about the pelvic area, I'm talking about urinary incontinence. Okay. It can be urinary stress, maybe slight leakage. It can be kind of just feeling the need to constantly need the bathroom.
Okay.
And I always say at some point in your perimenopause journey, please link in with a specialized pelvic health physio, because it is an essential part of the journey. So I would have first been introduced to pelvic health physio after I had my second child, and I definitely felt I wasn't as, I just felt a little bit more of stress incontinence. So I went to Milltown Physio, to Maeve Whelan, who's an absolute guru in this area, and she would have trained me in how to do the exercises properly.
Great.
And it's really important to have someone like that in your black book, because you can check in and you can see, a pelvic health physio as often as you need to. But at least you'll know you're doing the exercises properly, and you'll also know how are things looking.
Yeah.
Like Maeve will check you internally. She will she will work on the muscles. She'll make sure things are working as they should be. She'll spend the time to train you to do the exercises properly. And it's very important, because you're future proofing your urinary system for down the line.
I remember I didn't really hear a huge amount about it until I was pregnant with my little boy. And then, of course, your pelvic floor exercises are so important. And if truth be told, I'm probably not doing enough of them now, really. Yeah.
Same here.
So now that you were just saying it, I was actually clenching. I was actually clenching while you were saying, do your pelvic floor. But I remember hearing that it being described once that it just seemed to make a lot of sense to me. It was being described like an umbrella, an upturned umbrella, that when the water comes in, and if some of the spindles are weak, it can just fall down.
Excellent. That's a great analogy. It really made
sense to me when I heard that. Yeah, I went, okay,
brilliant.
Because the pelvic floor, the muscle extends doesn't it? From the the front, from your vagina to your anus.
Yeah.
So it is a really important muscle that we need to keep.
So important.
Right up into
into
our later lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So and again, not something that people are comfortable talking about.
No.
People don't want to talk about this stuff.
No.
I mean, I have no problem talking about this stuff because just the way I'm wired. But
yeah, and our next one more comfortable is with the most uncomfortable that people have.
Okay.
But so so going on from the pelvic, the urinary side of it, and I would say, please, if you're getting a sniff of stress incontinence, do not hold back. Google.
Yeah.
Even email me. I have all the resources that you can contact, you know, whether you're in Dublin or anywhere throughout the country. And that's one thing, Sheila, just to go back to, I mentioned earlier about trying to find the GPs around the country.
Mm.
I'm a country girl, as you are.
Yeah.
I'm very conscious of the fact it can't all be just in Dublin.
Yes.
So I have very much proactively found GPs throughout the country because I really, when I work with someone and they're down in, I don't know, or they're up in Donegal or they're in, you know, Westport or wherever they are, I hate to be, you know, it's not fair to say, oh, you have to come to Dublin. So now I've found GPs all over the place so that it's great. I can say, oh, where are you? Well, go and see this GP and so forth. And I think that's really, really helpful because the same with your pelvic specialist. I don't want it to be that if you're in Galway, you have to come to Dublin because there is someone in Galway. You know, there's someone everywhere. We just have to find them, you know. So that's just to mention that. Now, the subject that I am passionate about, as I am about all the symptoms, but really passionate about this one. And I started talking about this about a year ago, to the extent that someone said to me on Instagram, Catherine, you've covered it. You need to stop. Is vaginal atrophy.
Yeah.
And vaginal atrophy is another word for it comes under it's vaginal dryness, basically. You'll often hear it referred to as the genital urinary symptoms of menopause, GSM. But really, it simply is where the walls of the vagina become drier as you progress through menopause. Mm-hmm. A simple way to think about it is think about the cheeks of your face. They're nice and plump and elastic because we're moisturizing them every day.
Yeah.
We don't moisturize our vaginas, our internal vaginal walls every day.
Yeah.
So they become less elastic. Because as they, if they become less elastic, it means that sex is going to be more painful.
Sure.
And then that means that if when you have sex, you may tear easier than you would have done before.
Yeah, okay.
And you will tear because there's not as much elasticity within the vaginal walls. And then if you tear and you might have a little bit of spotting or maybe you won't have spotting, but that could then lead to inflammation. That then could lead to urinary infections.
Right.
What I see a lot of is where women will self-diagnose that they have thrush. They'll go to the chemist and they will use any cream that's on the counter for thrush. Generally, you know, there's some common creams out there. And it exasperates the problem because you're not putting moisture back in.
Yeah.
You're actually self-diagnosing as thrush. Please don't ever self-diagnose as thrush. Get a mirror and check and see, can you see thrush? Which basically, if it's a bad overgrowth, it looks like kind of cotton buds.
Mm-hmm.
Or go to your GP.
And is it because with my understanding with thrush is that you can feel dry and itchy.
Itchy, yes.
So that itchiness, which would make
sense
if you're dry.
The symptoms that you will feel with vaginal dryness are itchiness, inflammation, rawness.
Oh dear, yeah.
Painful sex, and constant or recurring UTIs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what can often happen is that you can exasperate it even more if you're wearing, say, tight jeans, tight clothes. That will make the symptoms worse. Or if you're wearing thongs, you have to be really careful with your underwear. It needs to be 100% cotton.
Breathable.
And so you have to be very, very careful with that. I would say at some point of the menopause journey, I think from what I've experienced and the thousands of women I've spoken to at this stage, everyone will experience vaginal dryness at some point in the journey.
We need to get comfortable talking about
it.
And also, it makes sense that your libido would reduce. Obviously, psychologically mm-hmm. or hormonally, it's happening anyway. But if you're uncomfortable and it's becoming painful, it's the last thing you'll want to do.
Yes. And it's not only that your libido will drop because of the hormones. Your libido may also drop because you're not sleeping.
Right,
but
yeah,
your
of course.
Libido will also drop if it's painful. But then what yeah. comes in to put like what I call the icing on the cake is then the next time you have sex, you're thinking, oh my God, it's going to be painful.
Yeah,
so you clench up and the anxiety comes in and it becomes a complete catch 22 situation. So it is one area really needs to be worked on. So say for me personally, so I would have probably found maybe about 2 years ago, I definitely found a little bit discomfort, not much, because I'm always, you know, keeping an eye on all of the
yeah,
symptoms.
Yeah, you're very in tune.
Yeah, so I would have found a little bit. So straight away, I started using internal moisturiser straight away. So I would use that now probably 2-3 times a week.
I'm sure there's people listening with pieces of paper and pens in their hands going, she needs to tell me what this is.
Yeah, it's the one I use is it's organic. The ingredients are very good. Now, the caveat I have to make with anything when it comes to vaginal moistures is you must always patch test on your body externally before you apply it internally.
Jesus, yeah.
And what works for me and what I'm not sensitive to is Yes Organics. It's an English company. Their ingredients are very good. I would say the majority of women I've worked with, that has worked a dream for them. But you will have a small percentage who may react to some of those ingredients.
Of course.
And then there's another product called Olive and Bee, which is it's made by an Australian woman, I think, mm-hmm. who had her own journey and she created this product. And that's another very, very good one. But actually, I think that's a lubricant. I'm not sure if it's a moisturizer. So Olive and Bee, Yes Organics. There is another one. I'll think of it. But the key with any moisturizer that you use internally in your vagina, you must patch test it beforehand because patch test for 24 hours.
Yeah.
Because if you have a reaction on your skin, then you will have...
You'll be in a lot of pain.
You'll have a double reaction inside.
Yeah.
And be very, very careful with some of the over-the-counter moisturizers. Just be very mindful, read the ingredients. And mm-hmm. I have seen some women having really severe reactions to some vaginal moisturizers.
Okay.
So be very careful. Don't just jump into grabbing one off the shelf. Do a little bit of research. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I would say, when it comes to sex, make sure... I'm over cautious now in terms of I use a moisturiser and a lubricant.
I was just about to say, because when I'm thinking of it, I was thinking, is a lubricant not enough? But obviously, really, you don't use that for sex, but you want to be using the moisturiser on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, you don't have to even use it on a daily basis.
Not?
I use it like 3-4 times a week. But many women, even when you look at the treatment for vagina, if your vaginal atrophy has progressed, you will need local estrogen. End of story. You need local estrogen. And that means Vagifem. And Vagifem, that's kind of the go-to in Ireland.
Is it a pessary?
Vagifem is, it comes in a little plastic type applicator.
Okay.
And on the top of it is like a little tablet. And then that's released up into the vagina. And then it's absorbed by the vaginal walls.
Yeah.
There's a treatment protocol around that where you start it and you take it for 2 weeks. And thereafter, you can move to 2 nights per week or 3 nights per week.
Is that something that you have to get on prescription?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
All
you
right,
have
okay.
to get that from your GP. What I say to women is if they're on that, once they've established the protocol, then the nights that they're not using the Vagifem, they could use the moisturizer so that you're getting nice, good nourishment into the vaginal walls.
Because why should you be in pain, I suppose, if products available?
Yeah. No.
So there are probably a lot of women who are listening who are in the situation and they are uncomfortable on a daily basis when Maybe fear, it's the fear of asking that's holding back.
Well, many GPs I've spoken to have said to me, Catherine, they won't mention vaginal dryness. So what the GPs have said to me, what they do is they say, do you feel dryness anywhere? But they're saying even at that, it's not prescriptive enough. Okay. Because the other thing is I know what vaginal dryness is, but to a woman who doesn't know, all she knows is itching, inflammation, soreness. That's not that that may not be equated to dryness. So I would encourage you to open the conversation with your GP because it is it's very, very important.
It's normal. It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
Not at all.
And really common.
At some point in time, I firmly believe every woman will experience vaginal dryness at some stage. And it if left untreated, it will become a bigger issue. Right. And if you're having recurrent UTIs, urinary tract infections, I would try and have the conversation. Is the precursor to that, is the reason they're happening, is it because of vaginal dryness? And then I would definitely get into the habit of having using a moisturizer and a lubricant, and you know, just making sure that you patch test. The other area that's really important for that whole kind of the elasticity, you know, for dryness throughout our whole body is omega-3s. You know, get those good fish into your diet, get your chia seeds, get all the foods with omega-3s, you know, nourish yourself, because not only are you going to help, you're going to help all your body with omega-3 from your brain all the way down.
Yeah,
you know,
skin, it's gonna, nails, the works.
Yeah, everything. So then just thinking back to the symptoms. Skin, nails, that's another big one. Skin gets very dry. So it's not just the vaginal areas, your skin throughout.
Entire body.
Your hair, you know, you can have hair loss, dandruff, you know, that's all part of it as well. I would find moisture, internal moisture, which is going to impact on our skin quality. I find that we're not drinking enough water for the most part. And I really encourage women to drink room temperature water throughout the day, because if you're even 2% dehydrated, it impacts your brain function. It impacts your cognitive function. So not only are you looking after your brain, but you're also looking after your skin, your hair, your everything, your bowel health. Oh my God, your bowel health is so important in menopause.
Okay.
So water is really, really important.
Plenty of fiber.
And fibre, yes, essential. Because if you think about it, think about it a little bit like a dam. If your bowels aren't moving as they should do, you're looking for a daily bowel movement that is smooth, doesn't cause any pain, and is solid in a nice way. Mm. If that's not happening on a daily basis, the wall, let's just say, you know, you have like the analogy of the dam, everything gets backed up, the toxins are backed up, so you're not releasing the toxins from your body, and then those toxins can go, you know, they just get backed up,
reabsorbed,
and our energy becomes more stagnant and everything gets held up. So it's really, really important to make sure that we look after our digestive and our gut health at this time.
One of the questions that's jumping into my head is, can we, I mean, I know we can't, you know, turn back time, and it is what it is, but can we actively slow the onset of perimenopause? I mean, can we now, at a certain age, if we're not experiencing symptoms and we're still drawn to this conversation, can we put, I don't know, things into place in our diet or otherwise that will
God,
help? I mean, I know you've spoken about the impact of stress and the importance of certain foods. It is it proven that it can work? Can we slow down time?
You're asking
for a friend.
Yeah, you're not going to stop the hormones' natural decline that has to happen.
It's inevitable.
But you can do the lifestyle aspects of it, and particularly the food aspects of it, that are going to keep your body firing on all cylinders. Okay. And you can put, like, phytoestrogens are foods which mimic the action of estrogen in the body. But Sheila, I have to make the caveat, they're never going to be as strong as synthetic hormones. You know, but they can help. They can top things up, but they won't be as strong. But certainly, adding as much phytoestrogen foods into your menu, into your diet as you can, is essential.
I've just realised at this point of the conversation we are still only at the absolute tip of the iceberg, despite chatting for let's not even say how long we've been chatting.
Oh God.
So I think we need to do a series, Catherine. Let's just try and zone in on some big hitters, right, at this point, because I do want to get to the questions as well. You've already covered so much, which is brilliant, but you have mentioned it a good few times. And I know there's a lot of controversy around HRT, hormone replacement therapy, and whether it's right for everyone. And there are various reasons why it may suit you or may not.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I know. Go.
We're jumping in there.
And this is where we leave the conversation for now. Next week, Catherine covers HRT, early menopause, and she also answers a selection of questions that were sent in to me on Instagram as well, including advice on supplements. This episode of Ready to Be Real Conversations was brought to you in partnership with Irish kombucha brand Synergy, who offer a delicious range of 100% natural, organic and low in calorie sparkling drink varieties containing all the amazing benefits of kombucha and available in supermarkets nationwide.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.